This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Trip Taco just $2.99. Comes with a big cube. This deal's so fine. Brisket breakfast, so much to choose for $2.99. You really can't lose.
Taco to go. Taco to.
This deal legit.
Taco to go. Taco.
Only at Quick Trip.
Taco to go. Taco to go. Taco to go.
$2.99.
Carolina with a 1-0 series lead after dominating game one, but needing overtime to get it done. Game two tomorrow night back at Capital One. Last night on the call for ESPN was the terrific Sean McDonough with Ray Ferraro and Emily Kaplan, who is the on-ice interviewer and observer. She does a phenomenal job. I'm a big fan. Emily joins us right now. You can follow Emily on X on Twitter at Emily M. Kaplan. So, admittedly, I don't know a lot about hockey until this time of year, Emily, when I watch it a lot, and I love playoff hockey. Was it as one-sided last night as it appeared to have been from the ice level?
Well, firstly, thank you for having me on, Kevin, and it's so great to connect. Appreciate the kind words.
Yep.
Yes. Bottom line, yes, it was. I've been around this Capitals team a lot, cover them a lot in the regular season. I was there pretty much the last 2 weeks of the regular season as Ovi was closing down on the record and through their whole first-round series as well. And this is a really well-coached team. It's just a great team with an identity and a lot of guys that play hard for a coach that always seems to have the right adjustments. And last night was the first night I can remember them just looking disjointed, like they just didn't have it. And, okay, like maybe there's this rust, there's a long layoff, the other team is dealing with it too, but the fact that it didn't get better over the game was just puzzling to me. Spencer Carberry has gone out of his way to compliment the Montreal Canadiens, their first-round opponent, you know, of how valiant they were. But the truth is, and the coaches were saying this to me in the middle of the game, and I think this is what they're going to be talking about heading into game two, the Carolina Hurricanes are just a different beast. They're seasoned. They're ready for the playoffs. They apply a ton of pressure, and the Caps just need to make sure they're on their A game. And I think they'll make their adjustments, but it definitely was as lopsided as it looked in game one.
So the shot attempts, 94-34. I'm just curious, is that like unprecedented territory in terms of one-sidedness on a shot attempt stat line?
You know, it would be a bigger deal if the team they were playing wasn't the Carolina Hurricanes, because this is their MO. Sometimes they get a bit of slack for it in the hockey community because it's just shots, 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 shots all the time. And Spencer Carberry is like, we have a very similar system, but the biggest difference with the Capitals is shot selection over shot quantity. And so I think that this is often what you see with the Carolina Hurricanes. Critics of them will say, well, it kind of disguises. Maybe they're not as dominant as they look. It's just the way they play. At the same time, this is who they are. It's their identity. I also find them to be very well coached by Brendan Moore. They're very consistent. So I think that's the only reason I wouldn't raise a huge alarm, especially when we're talking about shot attempts.
So that's something they're known for. I'm curious, is that an analytics thing? Is that an analytics-driven number that Carolina's bought into?
Well, their general manager, Eric Tulsky, definitely comes from an analytics background. If you don't know about him, I would suggest you Google him. He has a fascinating way that he got into the hockey world. He's got a bunch of patents. He's a PhD. He's far smarter than any of us. But their coach, Rod Brind'Amour, is a guy that played in this league for a very long time and is all about effort, and he's known for his workout habits and being Rod the Bod. And I think his system, yes, he's bought into a bit of the analytics, and I think that's definitely analytics-based, but his philosophy is all about work and effort. And it's, you know, again, it's a very aggressive style. They're pressing you all the time. They're, you know, getting shot attempts all the time. And so I think it's a blend of both that creates the Carolina Hurricanes identity.
We're talking to Emily Kaplan from ESPN. So when you get a result like last night, and it's not totally unusual when one team dominates, but this sport is built for a goaltender to keep you in the game and for the results sometimes to go the opposite way of the team that's dominated. How good was Logan Thompson last night, and how good has he been in the postseason so far?
Yeah, he's been spectacular. I just think Logan Thompson, and really Charlie Redlinggren, you know, kind of gets lost in this. He fell off a little bit at the end of the regular season, but they were so spectacular for the Caps all season long. Logan rose to a different level, though, to really take the starter's position. And he's just one of those guys that had an interesting path to get to the NHL. You know, wasn't necessarily a blue-chip prospect, but always worked his butt off. And a really fascinating guy to talk to all the time. And I think there was a lot of questions, right, because he missed a bit at the end of the regular season. They were saying it's upper body injury. I do believe it was a head injury. And then they name him as the game one starter coming in cold, and he was just fantastic in that game one, showed no signs of rust. And I think that they're really lucky that they have something special in Logan Thompson, a starter that they can ride out, hopefully, through a long playoff run. And if they have to turn to Charlie Lindgren, I think, no, they feel very confident in him too.
So in sports, in these series, sometimes these games are kind of one-game entities and there's no carryover. It would be hard not to see some carryover after watching last night. But what do you think Spencer Carberry, the adjustments are? What are the adjustments the Caps have to make to ensure that the ice isn't tilted as much as it was last night?
Yeah, I mean, the words that they were using last night was hesitation. I think maybe it's just even a mindset of not letting the Canes dictate the play and saying, guys, like, we have a system too. And I think that the players, just for whatever reason, were overwhelmed. You saw an adjustment mid-game yesterday that I think you'll see continue for game two, which is Alexei Protas, who's been one of their best players all season long. He came back from a very serious skate cut injury. He was starting on the fourth line, but as the game progressed, you saw him get some looks in that top six and back on Ovi's line. And I'd expect him to start on, you know, with Strome and Ovi in game two. And then I'm trying to think of what other adjustments they're going to make. I honestly feel like it's just kind of like a mindset thing where, like, they came into this and maybe just taking things a little for granted, feeling good about the way things went with Montreal. And I think more so just like understanding that this is going to be a battle. And I know that these guys will, because it's just what they've done all season long. They've exceeded expectations. Every time everyone thinks they're going to fall off, they always find another level. But I think those are some of the things that you're going to see. Also just trying to move the puck a bit quicker and up the ice. I think that was one thing that they just, again, the hesitation, like, it didn't look fresh. It didn't look crisp.
So what's it been like? You've been a part of covering a lot of these games this year because of the OV chasing down of Gretzky. What's it been like to be a part of that and to witness it up close?
Yeah, it's super special, and it's a privilege, something I don't take for granted. I really feel privileged just to get a glimpse into this team and why Ovechkin is so beloved in this league and what makes him, you know, just one of the enduring characters and, you know, hockey players of our time. I think he's a way better captain than people realize, the way that he leads by example. He sets the tone. He's also really goofy and he's funny and, you know, he's always keeping it light. It's a really special group of guys. I think they all realize that in preseason. They brought in a bunch of new players all in the early, you know, mid-20s age to try to make sure that they could, you know, retool on the fly. And they also seem to enjoy each other. So it's one of the more fun teams that I've been able to be around. And to be there part of history is something that, you know, I'll remember for the rest of my career, because Wayne Gretzky's record is something people in hockey said was unattainable. No one ever thought that it would be broken. And for it to be broken by Alex Ovechkin and in a way that he did, I mean, I'm still speechless by it.
Do you think, like, last night was a bit jarring, I think, after the first round series against Montreal. And it's been a memorable season with the Ovi chase and the Caps unexpectedly having the season that they had as a team. Do you think they're in trouble in this series?
I don't think they're in trouble in this series because of the way they played in game one. I always thought this was going to be a 6 or 7 game series. I just think, they need to show up with their A game next game, point blank. I mean, if you lose 2 at home, that's when you've got the issue. You know, when you split at home, okay, like that's common in Stanley Cup playoffs where parity is, you know, why we love it. And any team that gets in has a chance. And these are two really, really great programs. So I wouldn't like raise the alarms right now after a game one loss, but if you go down 0-2 and you have to head to Raleigh, which is a really difficult place to play, I would be concerned.
ESPN's Emily Kaplan joining us. You just said Carolina is a difficult place to play. You get to be front and center in some incredible sports environments. It's like every night when I flip it, whether it's Dallas or Winnipeg or Edmonton or Toronto in particular, and I know Montreal was off the charts for their two home games in the first round series. What is the most electric atmosphere in terms of home ice in the sport?
So I'm in Toronto right now, and this little dirty secret is I don't think it's Toronto at all. I think it's a very corporate crowd to get up for this national anthems, but they're known as kind of a late arriving crowd, especially between period breaks. Like, I wouldn't necessarily pick the Leafs, even though you might assume them, right, because of their long-standing depth out. I think most of the true fans are outside in the plaza, you know, cheering their butts off there. Winnipeg, I haven't had the privilege of going there in these playoffs. I have been there in the past for a whiteout, and that's just something cool. Like, that's just unreal. I didn't get to go to the two games in Montreal because Turner had those games. But being there for Four Nations at the Bell Center for those USA-Canada games and what the Capitals players were telling me, that was the best environment they had ever played in. It's just such a unique hockey market. They're so passionate, and that building, it just, I mean, obviously it's rich with history, but they get up, and the fact that it was on a Friday night, I think that city was rocked upside down. I'd have to pick Montreal for number one.
Yeah, I had a friend of mine who went to Game 3, and he's a hockey fan. He says of all the sporting events he's ever been to, he's never been in a more electric, raucous environment, pregame in particular, than Montreal for that night. So I think a lot of people probably feel the same way. So you have this thing where at the end, your interviews, by the way, are phenomenal. I mean, you're so your brevity is incredible, but they're just great questions, and you're direct and to the point. It seems like the reaction to you is just really really great from players and coaches. But you do this thing where you say thank you at the end of interviews in the player or coach's native language. How many native language thank yous have you had to learn, or did you know a lot of them already?
You know, just being around the sport, it's such a multicultural sport. I mean, it's just a diverse sport in terms of, you know, a country. So Finnish, Swedish, Russian, Czech, I always mispronounce. My boyfriend gets on me all the time for it, and the guys never correct me. I'm always on David Pasternak, like, come on, like, let me get it right. French, and, you know, there's a couple other ones. I think for me, it's just a little sign of respect, and I think it's just a reminder to the viewer at home that what these guys are doing is really difficult when English is your second language and you're doing a live interview on television, and that's uncomfortable, and it's pretty brave and courageous. And so I think sometimes as viewers forget that, and it's just like a gentle reminder of like, hey, let's just like remember where this guy came from, remember, you know, how hard he's working. And I think the players appreciate it too, because that's a part of their story that they're really proud of.
Is there one you haven't done yet? Is there a thank you haven't done yet?
Good question. You know what? I felt bad yesterday. Alexei Protas, he's Belarusian, and yep. I'm pretty sure you say thank you in Belarusian differently than you do in Russian. I just knew that he did speak Russian, so I went with my spasiba, and I know that works, but I got to practice that one too.
You do a great job. I know you got to rush off to the Toronto skate this morning. Good luck tonight. You'll be back in D.C. tomorrow night, right?
Oh, she sure will be. Yeah.
Thanks, Emily.
I guess the weekend's off, though. Couch my week this weekend. I look forward to that.
Oh, you get the weekend off. How does that work? There are games.
Yeah, it's the weird window of scheduling, I think, you know, with the two different NBA and NHL playoffs, ESPN and Turner. So Turner gets all the games Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday. And you know what? I really look forward to watching their coverage.
Our friend Tariq El-Bashir actually is on the ice for some of those games for TNT.
No, we love Tariq. He does a great job.
Yeah, he does a great job. Keep up the good work. Really enjoy it. Thanks, Emily, for your time.
Appreciate you, Kevin.
Emily Kaplan, everybody, from ESPN, ABC. Caps and Canes tomorrow night, game 2. again, no local. Once we get to the second round, there's no monumental involved anymore. So no more Joe B, no more Locker, no more, you know, the boys, Alan May, Koken, especially, you know, back in the studio or on the ice. It's all national from now on. I'll tell you, Sean McDonough is excellent. I think this guy, Ray Ferraro, you hockey fans would know more than I would about him, but I think he's good. Emily's phenomenal. That is how you do that job. You know, every kind of interview is different. Some are more conversational. Some are, you know, just direct and to the point, and she has that job where it's direct and to the point, and she gets it right almost every night. We thank her because she was busy flying to Toronto and then getting to their skate this morning before their game tonight against Florida, where they have a 1-0 series lead. That was interesting. Toronto, more of a corporate crowd. You know, Toronto, for the Maple Leafs, they have not won the Cup since 67. This was one of the dominant NHL teams. I didn't know this until very recently. One of the more dominant NHL teams in the 60s. They had a run of like 4 Stanley Cups in 6 years, and they haven't won one or been back to one since 1967. All right, that is a drought, boys and girls, all right? That is 33 plus 25, 58 years since they've played in a Stanley Cup final, let alone won one. And their fans have been starved for it over the years, but that was interesting to hear her say that it's kind of a corporate crowd and late arriving. And you get that with sort of the wine and cheese corporate crowd situations in sports. Now, what they do, Max, in all of these Canadian places, more so than maybe the U.S. places, although maybe I'm wrong about that. This, but they have these plazas outside of the arenas.
Yeah,
where the Toronto situation, the Winnipeg situation, the other night watching that, it's thousands of fans, like mm-hmm. the Caps did during their Stanley Cup. You know, when they got to the Eastern Conference Finals, anyway, and into the Stanley Cup. But the Montreal crowd apparently is off.
They're bananas.
The chain.
They're crazy. They're so unbelievably loud, according to reports, that like it's ear piercing almost.
Yeah. Well, it would make sense. Toronto is obviously a more cosmopolitan city than any other in Canada, with probably the exception of Vancouver. I'm assuming those would be the top two kind of, you know, cosmopolitan, diverse, et cetera, cities in Canada, and probably in terms of affluence, right up there with Vancouver as well. I'm guessing. I could be wrong. For all I know, you know, Winnipeg is a very upper crust city. I don't think it is.
No,
I think it's more of a working class city.
They are. They the whiteout, yeah. They love the shirt. They are a huge hockey town. Like, Winnipeg is, it's incredible.
They love their hockey, and there are so many Canadian teams. You've got Winnipeg, you've got Edmonton, you've got Toronto still around. And it's been, correct me if I'm wrong, since Montreal's last Stanley Cup that a Canadian team's won one?
I believe that's...
It's been a long time.
Yeah, it's been... I don't think they've won in the 2020... In this millennium.
In this century, yeah. So we got to go back to the 90s for Montreal?
Something like that, yeah.
Okay. All right. If you want to weigh in, 301-230-0980. We usually don't do hockey call segments on this show. They're a little bit dicey, but during the playoffs, we can do it. 301-230-0980. Did you see last night's game as worrisome? They lost 2-1 in overtime. If you just tuned in for the overtime and you saw the final score, wow, hell of a game. It was a hell of a game. It was exciting. But it was a one-sided dominated game by Carolina. Reason to be concerned or not? 301-230-0980. It's the Kevin Sheehan Show on the Team 980, the team980.com. We are free and live on the Odyssey app.
All right, the arms race in the NFC Beast is heating up as the Cowboys traded for George Pickens and a sixth-round pick they sent over to Pittsburgh for a 2026 third and a 2027 sixth. Gabe Davis has been released by the Jaguars after he signed a 3-year deal prior to the 2024 season. He had 20 receptions for 239 yards and 2 touchdowns in 10 games played in 2024. Some name news. No, not where you think we're going. The Utah Hockey Club has officially chosen a name. They will now be known as the Utah Mammoth, a permanent identity for the NHL franchise after a 13-month process that included 850,000 ballots cast by fans in multiple rounds of voting. The Nats split their doubleheader with the Cleveland Guardians. In Game 1, they win 10-9. Jorge Lopez gets credited with the win, and Kyle Finnegan gets the save. Game 2, they lose 9-1. Brad Lord had 6 innings pitched, 3 hits, 3 earned runs, and 4 strikeouts. The Caps, unfortunately, dropped to the Carolina Hurricanes 2-1 in overtime. Jacob Slavin with the overtime winner. The Canes just outplayed the Caps in spite of the scoreboard, and Logan Thompson played an incredible game, might I add. Game 2 is tomorrow at 6:45 on 106.7 The Fan. This update is sponsored by the Team 980 YouTube page. Just open the app, type in the Team 980, and hit subscribe. Kevin Sheehan is live from 10 to 1 and Craig Hoffman from 4 to 7. Don't forget to like the stream and turn on notifications to stay up to date on all things DC sports. And that's what's trending.